The two books that we're going to be dealing with, that I'm going to be dealing with, depending on whether you're here or not, is today and tomorrow, are, to be sure, is Loneliness, The Fear of Love, by Ira Tanner, and another book called Escape from Loneliness by Paul Tremier. This one's available in the bookstore over here. The little story that goes with that is that Mr. Tanner was to be on faculty last week, and came down with
mono.
And was not able to meet his commitment, so we're just picking up his book and doing some talking about that. I was not acquainted with that before, and Loneliness, Escape from Loneliness by Tremier is one that I've known for some time.
It's in the bookstore, too.
Is it in the bookstore, too? Thank you. That's great. I'm glad that it is. A couple things about those, and then we'll try to get into it, about the people. I don't know Mr. Tanner, but my understanding is that he has a master's in social work and does a lot of family and marital counseling, if I recall, in California, and has spent a lot of time at the Institute of Transactional Analysis. So his book is largely growing out of the three-circle adult-child kind of thing that I'm sure a lot of you are acquainted with, and I'll do some referring to that. His book was written in 73, not too long ago. On the other hand, Tournier's book goes way back. Paul Tournier is, I don't even know if he's still alive. I heard him speak once. I was impressed because he brought such a beautiful young French woman to translate for him. He speaks French, of course, from Geneva, Switzerland. A psychotherapist, a physician, eminent lay Christian theologian. There's a number of books. His book, The Meaning of Persons, way back, I think in the 40s. This was written in 1948, and I think Meaning of Persons was before that. It was just sort of shook up all kinds of people from both a psychological as well as a Christian point of view. When I talk about on some other topics, I ask people to identify, well, why don't we do that? That's not a bad idea. Let's see. Okay, you talked about this last week. If we had a larger room, I'd ask you to get up and move around. But I'll just ask you to pick one of those, if you would. Assume for the moment that those are the only possible answers. I know you could come up with about 17 others, but if you can't see them over there, number one is get with others, number two is get physically active, number three is escape, and number four is tell one other person. Would you choose one of those that is most likely your answer, your most usual answer, if you complete the sentence, when I'm lonely, I usually. When I'm lonely, I usually get with others, I usually get physically active, I usually escape. By that I mean TV, sleep, booze, sex, drugs, I don't know what all of yours are, I'm not listing mine, I'm just escape. Or when I'm lonely, I usually tell one other person. So when I'm lonely, I usually, for the moment, limit yourself to one of those. I know there will at least be three people who say, well, I'm really between those two of those. I'm asking you to push yourself and choose one just for the moment. Got one? Got one? Mm-hmm. Okay. How many of you picked number one? Just hold up your hand if you picked number one. Okay. How many picked number two? Okay. How many picked number three? Okay. And how many picked number four? Okay. Let's go back, if you mind, yes, voluntarily, if up to you whether you want to or not. Once I pick number one, why that one? Someone, anyone, or two people, whoever.
I like being with other people, so that's an excuse for me to get with someone.
Okay. But you're lonely, rather than when you're lonely to get physically active or escape or these, you pick that one. Is there any particular reason?
I can't really say I ever get lonely.
Oh, okay.
So, I mean,
all right. Good.
That seems to me to be kind of the only one that really, in my opinion, satisfies the problem.
For you.
Eliminates loneliness. Mm-hmm. The other ones are kind of alternatives that maybe replace loneliness with something else, you know, and divert it, but that's the one that kind of
And it's an immediate thing. You can do it right away.
Okay.
It's also a type of escape, I think, for me. When I'm lonely, it's usually because I'm uncomfortable in being with myself. Mm-hmm. And so I can avoid that by getting around other people.
Okay. All right. Number two. Somebody pick number two. Get physically active. Somebody, why that one rather than some of the others or whatever?
It's readily available. I'm in a position where I can go out and walk real fast and think as I walk, and that does it for me.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Someone else?
Sometimes loneliness is with being with other people that you don't relate to or that you can't really talk to, or you feel more lonely being with people, or sometimes it just isn't possible for a culture or something.
Mm-hmm. And so physically active makes that, yeah, okay.
Can we add mentally active to that? Because sometimes I find that I can get away and just think.
Sure.
And my mind is very active, and mm-hmm. I might be sitting
okay.
drinking a
beer. Right. There might be, it might be one in here, but it could be in here too. We can adjust. But yeah. What I meant here was a lot of people say, well, if I do something, then I'm like, I'll take my hands and
I guess you can put it in with the escape because you're not going away from the problem. You might be thinking
right.
about it.
Okay, yeah. Fine. Well, and people here often do too. You know, when they're physically active, they're able to, like when she walks, she thinks. Yeah, okay, fine. Yeah, the word escape really maybe belongs with all four or whatever. You know, we can get back at that too. Anybody else with this one?
I think I would go more with that one.
Yeah. Like, what do you do usually?
Oh, I bicycle.
Yeah.
I enjoy swimming or walking.
Yeah.
It's good.
Okay. All right. How about escape? The other one. We have a number of hands on that one too. Sure.
Well, loneliness usually with me equates unhappiness, concentrating or dwelling on my own mental state, and escape is distraction. You start watching TV, you stop thinking about yourself and think about other things.
Okay.
And the same with sleep. You shut off your mind and stop.
Okay. Somebody else? Yes.
I put myself even more in my work mm-hmm. than before, so I don't have to think about
yeah.
it.
Okay. Anybody else?
I find I get sleepy.
yeah.
And I'm not always sure sometimes if I'm tired, I feel lonely. It's almost as though loneliness maybe is a feeling that's there all the time, and when I'm tired, it comes up.
Yeah.
So I think, oh, well, I'll just go to sleep. Or else I read. Reading's a great way to
yeah.
sleep.
Sure.
Well, sometimes I seek the escape before I realize that I'm lonely.
Oh.
It's funny, I'll maybe even mesmerize myself with TV and I think, yeah, this is not like me. And then it kind of
daunting.
Comes back the other way and I identify the problem. And then I either seek something physically active to do or work myself out of it. But if I hit a lull, first thing I know,
okay.
I'm either doing something real passive, which I don't ordinarily do, and so then I think, what's this? There's a message or something.
Okay.
Reverse, sort of.
And what else? How about number four? There were some hands. Yeah.
I think I do that sometimes. I think it's good, you know, when you're lonesome, to say something to somebody and say, hey, I'm lonesome, and then you don't feel so bad.
Yeah.
It's a reversal.
By just saying it to someone and talking it out, then you need the pressure.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
I find that it has to be with one other person. It can't be.
Can't
be a group,
no.
Because then I continue to be just as lonely, because I can't relate until the whole group that I'm lonely.
Yeah.
I can tell only one person that
mm-hmm.
understands me, I guess,
mm-hmm.
or I trust.
I agree with Gail on the fact that, first of all, I relate much better to one-on-one or
yeah.
one in small group,
mm-hmm.
and otherwise you can very easily be lonely in large groups
oh,
of people.
Yes.
It's very hard to be lonely when you're having a one-on-one with someone.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we talked about earlier today. We talked about Holden as community. I mean, there's you know, loneliness is rife at Holden. There's just no question about that. And we all talk about it, and I don't mean say it's bad or whatever it is, but you know, it's here. We'd be silly not to think that just because there's lots of people, or just because we use the word community all the time, you know,
yeah.
That doesn't mean that there is loneliness. Of course. that, of course, assumes the availability of that one other person, as we say before. It may not be as immediate if they're in Afghanistan or wherever it is that they are at the moment. It gets a little difficult to find that person, so that has some, probably has some limits too. I asked the folks then last week, and this is what I often do, is what's, for you, what's the opposite of well, I didn't start by saying, I'm trying to, we're talking about loneliness, not in the sense of aloneness or solitude. I try to make a distinction. I use the word solitude. It's not the, you know, the only way to go, or aloneness. Aloneness is when I choose to have time for myself, and I, you know, take off time or space or whatever it is, and I go do it. Choice, and it's good, and it's desirable, and it's healthy. You know, healthy. I mean, I'm pleased by it. It probably is something I very much need. Solitude. In contrast to that, loneliness is that that we're talking about is that uneasy feeling that, that we would. We describe it as happening to us, or something like that, or something we aren't pleased about, and we might do something about it. It might come out of, you know, the feeling, as we said, about ourselves, or half a dozen of maybe other things that would happen, but it's usually not, we're not talking about a pleasant kind of an experience. So in loneliness, that's what I'm talking about here. And aloneness and solitude, it seems to me, is a different kind of thing, important kind of thing, but not the kind of thing that I'm talking about at the moment.
What about lonesomeness? Is there a distinction there? Maybe?
I'm not sure about that. I don't know if I've ever done that. I suppose for me, lonesomeness sometimes could be loneliness directed at someone. I miss someone. And I guess when just pop like that, that's what I think, the way I use that word. I'm lonesome. It's usually me. I'm lonesome for Ginny. I'm lonesome for my kids. I'm lonesome for someone. But again, loneliness for me is when all of other stuff, and I might be very close to Ginny at that time, and it might not really, my very best friend is there, and yet there's something happening. I don't know if that's an accurate one, but that's the thing that hit me when you spoke. Then my question is, what for you is the opposite of loneliness? For those of you who heard me say this last week, you don't have to blot out the answer right away. There isn't one answer. I'm just my answer. Your answer would be.
A saturation of togetherness.
A saturation of togetherness. That's a good dose, isn't it?
Too much. Feeling at home with myself.
Feeling at home with myself.
No time to think.
No time to think.
Being stifled.
Pardon?
Being stifled by too much, too many demands.
Oh, too many. So the opposite for you would be all kinds of stuff rather than nothing. Okay.
It's also unpleasant.
Yeah, okay. All right, that's interesting. Anyone else?
Companionship?
Being comfortable being alone or being with others.
Yeah, simply being comfortable, maybe.
Okay. My definition, and I'll offer it for what it's worth, is friendship. It's close to what you were saying about companionship. For an opposite, for me, and it doesn't have to be for you. That led me to say last week, and I'm going to quickly do this because it gets me into at least part of Tanner that way. I can surreptitiously do that. To the qualities of friendship that I talk about, I'm not going to go into a long thing about them, but then it'll let me say some things about loneliness as well. My understanding of ingredients of friendship are mutuality, trust, openness, risk, and gentleness. And I have lots of things to say about each one of those, and I won't, when we want to go back at that after a while, we can. It seems to me then, this for me becomes a definition of what it means to love. And to be loved is to have these kinds of responses from somebody. What led me to do then, thinking about loneliness, is what would be the opposites of this for you that then might be the ingredients, some of the ingredients of loneliness? And again, we can talk about this. This may not be adequate definition for you of a friendship or of friendship. I don't mean the one ultimate friendship. It could be a whole, there's whole levels of friendship. For me, the higher levels of this friendship would be very intense and would be intimacy, and for me would be my marriage. But there are other kinds of friendship I have that have these ingredients too. What would you think are the opposites of these? What would be, well, maybe obvious. What's the opposite of mutuality?
Exclusiveness.
Not being able to relate.
Not being able to relate.
Self-centeredness.
Okay.
Nothing in common.
Nothing in common.
Having walls.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Estrangement, alienation.
Okay. I think I'd add to it individualism, too.
Mm-hmm.
I think self-centeredness would come very close to that. Ism, I would say, not just being an individual, but I'd say ism. You know, that's for me, that's different than just being an individual. What would be the opposite of trust?
Distrust.
Jealousy.
Jealousy?
Apprehension.
Apprehension? Suspicion. Somebody said suspicion, didn't it? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Getting unaccepted.
Feeling unaccepted.
Doubt.
Doubt. Okay. And what would be the opposite of openness? Says he innocently.
Reserve.
Reserve.
Mm-hmm.
Withdrawal.
Escape.
Walls.
Escape. Yeah. Pardon? Walls.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Closeness. Pretty obvious one. Word of word. About risk.
Fear.
Fear.
Safe.
Yeah. Safety.
Pause.
Mm-hmm. Need for security, certainty, whatever, you know, we'll all be related to that, I suppose. What would be the opposite of gentleness? By the way, when I say gentleness, I don't mean namby-pamby. I mean sensitivity that comes out of strength.
Mm-hmm.
Insensitivity. What
uncaring.
Harshness?
Gruff, aggressive?
Uncaring.
Yeah.
Or judgmental?
Yeah.
Judgmental.
Indifference.
Yeah.
Individualism can come back to that, too, maybe, too, is not perceiving the need to see someone else's.
That's right.
Individual. It's interesting that a lot of people say that the opposite of, if this is love, the opposite of love is not hate, but indifference.
Yeah.
Not caring about the other. It's not that lots of that stuff then pops up in Tanner's thing that he puts together, and I'd like to share some of the things that he works on for that. He talks about loneliness, and I'll share some ideas with you from what he says, and then invite your discussion about them. I hope we will have time to do that. Talks about loneliness in terms of emotional pain, but it is often in its heavier states akin to grief, that chronically, if it's a chronic rather than an acute kind of a loneliness, that it's related to fear, most often in not obtaining a desired relationship or the fear of losing a desired relationship. Like even for a moment, we've done that forever. But the pain, according to Tanner, is usually a very strong motivation for acting. That loneliness tends to be pain that motivates us to do something. But that the counterforce of social pressure or societal norms causes us most of the time to deny that we are lonely. My own story about this is that when in the past I would ask people, well, how many of you get lonely? Very few people would hold up their hands. But if I asked, what do you do when you get lonely? People choose what they do. Terribly sneaky, but it doesn't. We don't want to say, yeah, hey, I'm lonely. And yet, the contention of Tanner and Trinier is that most of us are. It doesn't say everybody is, and certainly doesn't say everybody has seen kinds of loneliness, but that most people experience it. And he talks about, well, Trinier goes more into that in terms of that it's not only the nervous and the people who have been frustrated as children, but all across, and uses illustrations really across the board in terms of leaders, the elite, and everybody else, and describes it. I remember I did a little shtick way back, I don't even remember the years anymore, for the Chief of Chaplains of the Air Force. He sent me to the Far East. Check out some air bases and things in terms of what chaplains were doing for families. And it was pretty sad.
and I made a rather strong report on what I saw. And it sort of turned out that I happened to be going to Washington, D.C., and my innocence called up and made an appointment with him and found out all the church bodies say, you don't do that, you have to take everybody with you. Well, an appointment of 10 minutes or 15 minutes, where I stayed almost 2 hours. The loneliest man I met on a whole tour. He had everything to do, nobody to talk to. He just cut out all his appointments and we sat and talked for almost 2 hours. Because there was nobody to talk to for him. Everybody was coming in with all the junk. Terribly lonely man. And said so. You know, he wasn't hiding it. He just says, I just got to talk. And we just did. I think I found that in many, many places. So the social norms fight it. It is a feeling of not only wanting another when it, you know, comes out of that deprivation of, whoops, and fear of not obtaining or losing, but also being wanted by another. Not only of wanting another, but being wanted. Tanner goes on to quote from a fellow named Weiss, where he thinks that there are kinds of this isolation. He calls it emotional isolation, which is related often to that intimate relationship, either having it, not having it, or losing it. Or social isolation, which is the feeling that you're at the margin of life. Whole darn thing's happening. I'm way out here. What the heck does that mean? And I'm here. I'm not connected with what really is going on. The business of aimlessness. I don't know where I'm going at a given time. Lots of times with the young, of course, in society, especially the crazy moving society we have, by that I mean fast moving and choices and umpteen opportunities never known before. And at first, the emotional isolation, the need is for that hooking into to another. And the need in the social isolation that he talks about is the need of a network to connect to. That it isn't only another, but it is others that we see ourselves related to. Or saying another way, a purpose, a vocational, what we would call a vocation, a direction to go. Loads of people who are socially isolated take care of themselves, who are individually, emotionally isolated, take care of themselves in their social, non-isolation by job and keep moving. Most of us want both of those to be happen. Not everybody is able to achieve that. And Tanner adds to that, that there is what he would call an existential isolation as well, or loneliness, which in which life itself doesn't have any meaning, in which he would relate it to an alienation from God. That kind of loneliness is even, you know, deeper and maybe even more pervasive, and that the others may be signs or signals of it. The two basic feelings Tanner maintains that underlie loneliness are this lack of sense of belonging, and the second is that no one understands. That there is a moment of time when people don't understand where I am. I don't know how many times we say that to one another. You don't understand. You wouldn't be talking all the time if you understood, or whatever, you know, kinds of things that we say. So the need is to feel chosen, that somebody cares enough to select you, to hear, to listen, to whatever that may be, or that need to be heard by an interested, sympathetic, accepting other. He traces a lot of that to what might happen in childhood, and I'm not going to spend a lot of time on that. But then he says there's a whole raft of what he thinks are social conditions that have highlighted loneliness for our age, and we might want to respond to these as well. He thinks that there are ways, and he by no means does blanket things on that, I'm lifting stuff out, you could look at it, that technology, with its push on production, efficiency, and specialists, have cut us up into more pieces, so that we are seen for what we produce. If you're efficient for that end product, that you feel coggy as a cog in that whole process. Or that you get so specialized that you can't talk to each other. We were in trouble at the noon getting good conversation going with our friends that were from Salt Lake City looking at the mine up there, because I'm out of my water, you know, when I don't know what science is all about. Whatever it is, you just use the word science and I'm cowed. And they were talking about all that kind of stuff that they're doing up there, and it was great. but I was struggling the whole time for, you know, staying in the conversation. But in a sense, they're specialists, and they were good at it, and it was neat. I'm glad that they were here, but tend to cut us off. The other is, another is, from Tanner, television. The non-communication that takes place when we glued this way, even very close to each other, but going that way, nothing happening this way, or very little happening this way. And he believes that we often get a distorted picture of reality, of social reality, that word. Maintains that the studies show that people who have X amount, I don't remember what it was, of television listening or viewing habits are more distrustful and more fearful of others. That their imagination of what others are like has been so emphasized and distorted that they tend to be automatically, according to the studies, more fearful and more distrustful. Or that the rewards so often go to scheming, unattached, competitive, ruthless people, because they become our heroes. And we're in that era of the anti-hero being our hero. Thirdly, he said one of the social conditions is the urbanization, especially the mobility, to live it, to work in Manhattan and have within 10-minute radius of you 220,000 people. We just can't take that in. We just can't. Or to have 40 million people in the United States changing residents a year. Like that. Very few people pointed to the fact that Toffler, in his book, Future Shock, had spent a whole chapter on friendship, what was going to happen because of that. He saw that way back along the line. I thought that was interesting. The thing that would be tough for you, and most of us maybe, to accept, is that Tanner also adds that some of the social conditions are the Renaissance-derived values. Right in the pluralism where we're accepting people having different kinds of points of view all the time, he thinks that other things that have contributed to our loneliness are the emphasis on independence, individualism, freedom, and competitiveness. He thinks that each one of these has built within it the possibility of separateness, of cutting us off from others. Not that they're necessarily intended to do that, he says, but that they may be making that kind of a contribution. As he looks beyond that, he says that the fundamental emptiness that we see then comes, and for him, out of self-centeredness, competitiveness, and the secularization, the substitution of whatever else it may be for God. And then he has a last chapter that isn't the strongest of his book, but where he talks about religion and loneliness. But to summarize what Tanner's saying, and here's what you'd have to deal with. Loneliness is really a result from every dimension of the fear of love. And the solution to loneliness, for Tanner, is coming to understand what it means to assume personal responsibility for the consequences of the risks we take when we love. That's a long sentence, but let me go back. He is not saying it's the risk of love. He is saying it's coming to understand what it means to assume personal responsibility for the consequences, what might happen if I take the risk to love. For instance, that I might be misunderstood, or that I might be hurt, or that I might be judged, or that I might even be rejected. It isn't saying I won't do it because of that, but it's saying I'm going to have to figure out what to do about that. As a responsible person, what do I do if I get hurt? What if I do if I get judged? What if I do if I get rejected? Can I do that? That's where he sees a solution coming from. Tournier, much more, and we'll spend more time on that tomorrow. Chapter in Tournier, if you anybody get a look at it, on demands. What's it called? The Spirit of Just Demands is an excellent chapter. Very, very, I think, very pointed chapter. I'm going to spend most time tomorrow on that from Tournier. Tournier goes into many more things then that deal explicitly with the Christian community contributing towards the positive, you know, aspect of this, of giving, helping us grow away from, identifying and growing away from our self-centeredness, of having an identity and a sense of acceptance out of the community, small expressions of it, maybe one-to-one, and maybe a worshiping community, or maybe a whole, you know, a large community, whatever it is, but and doesn't pretend that that happens all the time. In fact, maintains it probably doesn't happen all the time. He sees that as being largely it, and the gift of receiving, as well as the gift of giving, the ability to receive something from others. I said last week, and I still would, I repeat it now, that maybe one of the things that keeps us from reaching out in friendship over here, one of the risks that is toughest for us, isn't and our openness, our unwillingness to remain, that we remain close, isn't only that we're afraid to let others see us as we are, but that we may be afraid to see others, another, one other, as he or she really is, because it may be a very, very serious burden for us. One last thing, Tanner and Trinity both have a lot to say about loneliness inside of marriage and families. Talk about that a little bit, or just the interaction about it. Yes?
I think us as human beings, I don't think God made us to live alone. It's just something that, of course, our society has changed around, and the women's lib movement, the independence of everybody wanting their independence, but yet we don't have the compromise in between there on people still wanting to live together. I guess that's the reason why the divorce rate is up so high. But there's got to be a compromise there, and life has to slow up a little bit so that people do continue living together, or else we'll have twice as many housing units, you know, and everybody will be in this room. There won't be just 50 of us, or 40 of us here.
One of the key things for me in this is that in mutuality there have to be two wholes. You know, if one of these is half or quarter, whatever it is, then it really doesn't get to be mutuality. I don't mean to see that everybody's equal. I don't mean to even imply that. But there are two full beings. And again, in that sense, individuals, people who have their own sense of value, worth, uniqueness, that see that same thing in another person. And it seems to me at times that it's been failure to do that. It's been intrigued by her beauty, his strength, his money, where, you know, whatever it may be, but often made it a dependent relationship, which is at sometimes a very useful one, but in friendship, it seems to me, you seek for mutuality. I mean, it moves, it's dynamic, and it's never rigid.
People are more critical of other people nowadays than they were.
I think people expect more
of
friendship.
More demanding.
And that sometimes may be reasonable, and that sometimes may be... Thanks. Somebody else.
I was thinking about the word gentleness there, contrasting that when a person is lonely. One of the things I'm aware of in myself is that often what happens with the gentleness is that I'm not gentle with myself at that time. And I'm wondering how much that affects a relationship too. And because I am alone quite a bit, I'm aware of needing to work on my relationship with myself and with God, that when I can be as gentle with myself as I would be with my friend. Example, I hear the little voice in my head, you know, that cracks the whip.
Yeah.
You dummy, you know, it's no wonder you're here, look at this mess you created for yourself.
Yeah.
And so forth. And yet I would never do that to a friend. So I'm thinking of how often the loneliness is getting away from those very qualities with myself.
Mm-hmm. Both Tanner and Trinier would say that's behind it is some kind of fear.
Mm-hmm.
That fear breeds loneliness and conflict, loneliness and conflict breed fear. And that's that cycle. And he says that's why something has to be broken into. And the Christians, I would say, you know, that would be the grace of God, maybe in a friend, maybe in a word, and maybe a remember, whatever, you know, all kinds of ways. But that we do, that very cycle. We say, we get down, we get better, something down, which puts us down, we go home,
yeah.
Go home.
Lower.
and why counseling or therapy or whatever you want to call it, in its best sense, when it's done for really the good of the people involved, and I would not want to say all therapy is, that then that's the effort to help break that cycle. Mm-hmm. When that happens, then I think it's good therapy. Or counseling, or preaching, or whatever else, or friendship.
I wonder if there ought not to be another concept there, unless it's meant by openness, or covered by openness, and that's acceptance.
Mm-hmm. For me, it would be a mutuality, but that in other words, if I'm going to be mutual, for me it is that you've got to be, I've got to see something in you and accept something in you as you are. And even I'd say further, that I would want you to be as much as you can be as a friend. Mm-hmm. And would hope you would want me to be all that I can be as a friend. But that's, that could be lifted out.
Yeah. How do you think change fits into this? Maybe you get someone as a friend or as a mate or something, and then they, as time goes on, change from what your expectations were, what you think they were.
What do you think?
How that works.
Somebody?
I think you have to grow together in order to not be lonely alone or together. Because if you don't grow together, then obviously there's been the changes that take place as you grow older and grow in different directions. They have to be mutually understood, otherwise it's not going to work.
That's where openness is important.
Mm-hmm. And in that openness, and say the change is occurring, it seems like that you can sense when someone's growing or when someone's changing. I mean, I guess I can feel in friendships when we're out of sync. I mean, when we're just kind of flopping along and not really, it's not really clicking. It seems that then we have to talk about it.
I'm not sure. I think it was so much in terms of changing together and doing that change together, because I don't think people actually do that. Yeah. But I think it's more of a case of being willing in the mutuality and in the whole acceptance, mm-hmm. to say part of this relationship is that I realize it's going to change and I'm going to accept that change as part of it and not try to resist it.
I think you have to be aware of the change is what I meant.
You have to be aware.
If a friend or a spouse or a, mm-hmm. or whoever is changing, you have to be open and aware of those changes so that you can accept them. Because if you aren't aware of them and this person has changed, it's going to change the feeling that you have, or it could change the feeling that you have.
Yeah, because the truth of the matter is we often have very different kind of experiences. And the traditional view would be if the woman would be at home with children and stuff and having her experience pretty much around that, maybe some outside activities, the man is going off to Shanghai or to New York, whatever it is, there's a whole realm of different experiences that might cause that person to be significantly different in that relationship. How do they allow for the fact that he or she is growing? Or in my specific case, at the university where I am, many women coming back to get their degrees, undergraduate and then often their graduate degrees. That changes. If the relationship has been sort of like this and she moves like this, at least in the image of the spouse, that changes. Or how are you ready to handle the fact that she may be moving out and even getting some more income, higher income indeed, than her spouse or something like that. That kind of change, and that's what you're saying, being aware of that and being ready for how do you work with that.
I think sharing is really important in that.
And that's what that openness would be about.
And that opens the dimension of you never possess a friend.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And if you're unwilling to let the other person grow, then are you really being a friend for the best that that person can be, or are you trying to possess them for the sake of something that you made yourself? And then there's a kind of a letting go, in the sense of letting that person be fully who they are, even apart from who you are, even within the integrity of the friendship.
Trine has a whole chapter on the spirit of possessiveness as the antithesis to what he calls fellowship or friendship.
I think another aspect of friendship is time, especially in this day and age.
Mm-hmm.
It takes time, even with a spouse, with another friend, with
I mean, maybe especially with this book. But sometimes those that are our closest friends are the ones who sometimes get short shrifted.
Mm-hmm.
Because we know we can continue to trust them. The risk isn't so great.
Yeah. I'd say time, energy, and offense, pain. Because that's where the growing takes place. When we do, you know, if something's happening to us that's deep and everything that, oh, Trini has a lovely thing. He was talking about an ophthalmologist friend of his who was having trouble with his wife. And he went visiting the guy's office. They both look in. He got a new machine for looking in the eye. And, you know, as doctors do, playing games, one's looking in each other's eye, looking in this machine. And his wife comes in, and he gets all tense, and, you know, and the whole thing disappears, whatever they were doing, the fun they were having. And he says he wanted to be able to say, how I wish you could look into the depth of her soul. He had been looking at the depth of his eye, but he wanted that. But at that moment, you have to look at that. Anybody, depth of anything, eye or soul, probably involves terrible pain, just even to open up, or to see something that you didn't like before, or even to tell another person you've seen something. And so it clearly is time, or it'll never happen, as you say, and energy. It might even be 2 minutes, and take the energy you're going to spend the rest of the day, you would have spent the rest of the day because of the emotional commitment, you know, the drainingness of it, and then the readiness for the pain of being seen and not, or seeing another person. I think that all three of those. We don't peddle a lot of that with our, you know, with our emphasis on quickness, speed, instant, whatever it may be. That's why some long-term experiences are terribly important before you know what a friend truly is. I've told people last week I've been blessed with, 1938 to now. That's 42 years. With a male friendship that's 42 years old. And it's just unbeatable kinds of stuff. Now my primary relationship, I'm quick to add, it's Ginny is, which has been almost 32 years. But even my friendship with Carl is even 10 years older than that. It's just fabulous. And now, it isn't a lot of time, but when we're together, these things, we can communicate almost instantaneously. Cut through all this stuff. I don't know what I've done without those two friends. I can't conceive of life without those two friends presently. Somebody else?
Those things that he talks about seem to have a particular effect on the old mobility, that families are no longer around to support an older person, the technology, that the person no longer fits in perhaps with what's going on. Does he offer ways that an older person can, I'm talking about someone past retirement.
Yes.
Perhaps.
Yes, there's, which of them has the chapter on the aged? Loneliness, it's in Tanner. The Loneliness and Loneliness of the Aged.
older ones say, all my friends are dying.
Yeah.
Is there anyone
I
can really talk to
you into? Yeah. My mom's line was, I feel like I'm in a big, huge room that's slowly emptying. Mm-hmm. She was left alone. So many of the friends were gone. The loss of identity, the loss of independence he talks about, and the ultimate aloneness, the death part of it. And then he puts his strength on childlikeness. This is in the PAC category of this transactional analysis, that to keep, not the childishness, but the childlikeness, that ability to maybe keep that is what he stresses in here. As we grow older, we need to continue to update our natural child. One way of doing this is write out a fun list. You know, things that were fun, and things that are fun, and things of that kind. And he lists some of those here as well. So he does, he gets at it.
I think the issue of pain is a really big one, and we're, the TV commercials and everything talk about how to avoid pain, you know, take a pill.
Yeah, sure.
And I think a lot of people get into alcohol to avoid pain, or sex to avoid pain, or, movies or TV, or so many ways we have of avoiding pain, and it just piles up and piles up. And I think so often people aren't willing to go through that pain in order to get to a friendship or to a relationship that would really have some richness. Mm-hmm. But we just wall that off and shut it away, and then finally walk away from a friend because we just don't want to deal with it. Something's happened between us, or just time is, too many things have added up and haven't been dealt with.
Loads of our fear is that fear of pain. Being hurt somewhere, whatever it means, or an ultimate one of death. That's a great one.
Many times the fear of the pain a person's experienced at once will cause them never to try to form pain again. I've seen that so many times in young people in their late teens.
I've been burned.
Very bad. They won't try again.
That's very true. And for us not to share with one another our having gone through pain and surviving it and coming through and the struggle of it, with the conviction that it does, that it does lead to growth, and that it's worthwhile. I hope we don't maybe share enough of that. We try to give the impression, well, geez, I would just sail through where I am today is really great. Well, I've said other people, my wife and I were in therapy for I don't know how long. I was in for 18 months, and she was in for longer than that. But the kind of thing that we're enjoying today, which is fantastic, is a result of a lot of pain, terrible. But I'm glad it was, and that we believe in the Christian faith that people do and can change. That's exactly what the Spirit is about, constantly changing. And always at those moments when we think it won't. P.S. Some of the loneliest people I know, I hope you won't see this as a pitch, are clergy people. Some of the loneliest people I know are clergy people. Many males have not dealt well with their sexuality, and therefore are afraid of intimate relationships, sometimes even their spouses, but certainly friendships, male and female. They say, I hang around with the other clergy. Not many of them have many close friends in the clergy, is my observation. And I've done some study on this for about 10 years. That's a sadness. And one of the great tragedies of the barriers we've built between, from both sides, between laity and clergy, is the lack of that chief of chaplain sitting there, or the chief of whatever sitting in an office and feeling cut off from the rest of the people. And that very feeling may be engendering the cutting off that takes place. So reaching out to, encouraging clergy to reach out for friendship with others, and encouraging lay people to reach out in friendship to human beings who happen to be labeled clergy is another aspect of it. They sometimes don't have, at least don't think they have, the freedom to build the kind of things that we're talking about. They think somebody's going to be suspicious right away. And as I talk to pastor about, I wouldn't want to do it, Mike. I said, then for God's sake, and I meant that, for God's sake, go do it somewhere else. Find somebody outside the congregation. At least don't. I maintain that a close friend in the life of a clergyman, one close friend, hopefully a spouse, her spouse, or another one, will change a whole ministry. The preaching, the counseling, teaching, the whole bit. And to be without such a close friend, it seems to me, impoverishes the ministry. Now, that's P.S. That's not what the whole thing was about, but I can't, having had those experiences with numbers of people, and afterwards having clergy walk up to me and say, here I am. I ain't never had a friend. And to tell me to have a friend doesn't help at all. I don't know what to do.
A friend on your subject.
Sure.
I've been friends and acquaintances with them. And I think one of the greatest problems for a clergyman to have to deal with is the reverence they receive from people.
Yeah.
People look at them with reverence and treat them as emissaries of God. I would like to treat them as God and set them aside expecting them to be perfect. And there's only two ways to deal with that. One is to try to act the role and meet the expectations.
Yeah.
Or the other is, if they're really broad enough, is to be themselves and then disappoint some
people. Yeah.
And that's a real
tough
problem. And then it's further compounded as particularly clergymen get older very often by worldly wealth problems. And mm-hmm. clergymen's kids want the same skis and bicycles as other people's. Mm-hmm. And suddenly they find that the glorious ministry that looks so great at age 20 or 25, mm-hmm. at age 45 or 50, suddenly they realize that they've taken a turn way back when that they're paying for now and their families are paid for, and that's hard to do with, and sometimes that drives them more to substitute this this adulation or reverence as a substitute for some of the worldly things that are not there.
I tell clergy people that the relationship with the laity is what they've made it, and that the laity, the relationship with the clergy, is what they've made it. I believe both of them.
Question, though, relating to the ministry of all of us.
Yes.
Not just
yes,
those who are called ministers, but right. everyone. Is much of the friendship seems to me depends upon there being a likeness between people. Mm. Something about them that's in common.
Yeah.
A place where they connect. Mm-hmm. And much of ministry is to unlikes. What do we do with people who are not like us? Where is the motivation of the love which reaches to the unlike?
Well, I think if when we move out from our own circles of being always alike, then we begin to have the possibility of friends. My Jewish rabbi friends are great, great blessings to me. Father Joe that I work with, the Archdiocese of Joliet, gives me insights into the growth of the internal journey that I can't get from any Lutherans. And so, I mean, and my dear black friends and stuff that I've gone over the years, those have all added those dimensions to it. But if we stay tied in, we are robbed of those that kind of diversity, I think. And sometimes limit our ministry because of it too. But we tend to get closer on all the people that are here. Love what we have two black people in the village now. I feel a little better. I tell people the school I'm at is 30% white. And I feel lonely when I'm in white group. I just have become accustomed to it for 8 years. And then I'm sure there's others here who have seen. Now, the likeness is in our humanity and in our attraction and for the Christian and the faith.